Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Jeffrey Swartz, professor of law at Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus, here together with my colleague, Brendan Berry, professor of law at where? Cooley's Law School, Tampa Bay campus. Okay, and I'm supposed to start at the very beginning, as I always do, that the opinions that are given and the things that are said by Brendan and or myself are our opinions and our opinions alone, unless we agree on them, but not the necessarily the opinions of the administration or the faculty of Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus or Cooley Law School in general. Here we go. Good morning, Hezzy.
Good morning. Good morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning.
That's our friend and patron and all-around good guy, Hezzy Aris, and we appreciate him more than you could possibly know. A lot has happened over the last 2 weeks since we have been together, and so we're going to talk about a lot of that today. Remember that I had changed the moron of the week to the loser of the week, and I do have a loser of the week. Jacketless Jim himself, James Jordan, representative from the state of Ohio in Congress, unsuccessful candidate to become the Speaker of the House, man about town in sleeves rolled up only, never with his tie fully around his neck, and clearly one of the nastiest people to ever walk around in Washington, who never smiles. The only thing that will ever make him smile is probably at Barack Obama's funeral. So I'm going to talk about him as the loser of the week, simply because most of you have heard me talk about the fact that Mr. Jordan, not many people call him Mr. Jordan, but I will, Mr. Jordan used to work at the Ohio State University. He was a wrestler there, which means he was a bully from the start anyway. And he then became a coach. And he was one of the coaches when one of the coaches that he was in charge of, sub-coaches or whatever you want to call them, was accused of molesting some of the other athletes. And this came from some of the athletes. And he refused to do anything about it because he said he didn't believe them. And as it turns out, it happens to be true. And the five athletes came out and said Jim Jordan knew all about it and helped cover it up, whatever. Jordan has refuted that and said, they never told me anything. I didn't know anything. He was like Sergeant Schultz. I see nothing. I hear nothing. Okay. And, it turns out that the Ohio State University, my alma mater, that's how we pronounce it, Ohio Mater. It rhymes with potato. Okay. Sorry about that. Was being sued, these five athletes in particular wanted to sue. Ohio State had been fighting it now for about 4 or 5 years, maybe 6 years. It went to the United States Supreme Court after lower courts had said, it's okay, you can sue the Ohio State University. And SCOTUS said, yeah, we agree with them. You can sue the Ohio State University and Jim Jordan, who was a party to the proposed suit. So, Mr. Jordan, you know, Mr. Smith went to Washington. You're going back to Columbus. And you're going to get sued. And you're going to end up with a judgment against you. And you're going to be accused of protecting a sex offender. I don't think you're long for Congress. I think you should worry about more your future than any other person you attack. Stop creating controversies or making allegations that you can't fulfill, because there's one against you that's going to cost you. And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. In fact, because the only time I'd ever see you smile in the future would be at Barack Obama's funeral, I want to be there when the judgment is entered against you so I can smile. You're just another one of those right-wing nuts who have literally no decency in their lives, who will tell you you shouldn't be fooling around with prostitutes, but it's okay for me. You should not be committing sexual acts against people who don't want those sexual acts, except for when it's me and I get to do it to somebody, or I get to cover it up. I think you are done for, and I am going to watch this with great glee. So there, you are my loser of the week. Brendan.
Oh, God. That was a nice surprise.
Wasn't that a nice surprise I just gave you? Yeah. Wasn't that a nice surprise? Okay.
Yeah, Christmas came early, you know. God.
Hard act to follow.
Yeah.
What can I tell you? Great guy.
Okay. Yeah.
We should ask him to be on the show sometime. Okay.
God. I tell you, man.
What do you got for us this morning?
Well, I don't know. I just, you know, so the have all your radio stations now gone to Christmas music 24/7? The radio
I'm
station
serious
I got.
Radio, yes.
Yeah. No, I've got a radio station tuned in. You know, I don't drive very much except when I'm going to work. And last night I'm driving home from work and they're playing Christmas music on there. They've already switched over to Christmas music. And I heard a lyric that I thought is so insulting. You know the song?
How do you insult people in a Christmas song? I got to hear this. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
You know, This is how bizarre my brain is. I'm listening to this song and I'm like, you know, that was mean. The lyrics are right. You know the song "I Don't Want a Lot for Christmas." Yeah, I don't want a lot for Christmas, right? I don't want a lot
There's
for Christmas.
Just one
all
thing I need.
Yeah.
Okay,
I don't want a lot for Christmas. All I want is you. I thought, well, that's a nasty thing to say. I mean, think about that for a minute. I don't want a lot.
Why?
I don't want a lot.
Why? What do you think?
Just,
it's a
just
song
you.
About
that's
pro-slavery
all.
Or something? Okay.
No. No, because I don't want a lot. Think about this. I don't want a lot. I just want you. Well, what does that say about you?
You're not a lot.
I don't know. Yeah, right. You know?
It seems like they're talking about Donald's hands. Okay.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. The things that go through my head. It's not a place to be. But anyway.
It really isn't.
You wanted a deep thought to start the show. There you go.
No, did you start? By the way, did your radio station? It is Christmas music. Do they play Adam Sandler's "Here Comes Hanukkah"?
No.
The Hanukkah song.
God.
Do they play that?
No, I'd like to hear it though.
They don't. You've never heard that? It comes from Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
It's his Hanukkah song. Here comes Hanukkah. No.
No.
Okay, well, we'll have to get that there. That's one of your Christmas presents this year. I'm going to buy you a recording
Excellent.
Of Here Comes Hanukkah.
I'm looking for it.
By Adam Sandler. Okay.
All right. Send me the Google link.
I'll send you a Google link. You'll enjoy it really well. There's a lot going on that's important, so we're going to try to get through a lot. I'm going to start with a rather short story. that needs to be paid attention to. There's a lot of litigation going on around case from Alabama. What was it, Allen versus Millen. That called for the Alabama legislature to redistrict, to recreate the black districts that had been there before Justice Thomas decided we did not need the Voting Rights Act anymore in the South because there's no discrimination. And apparently now a majority of the court has recognized, yes, we still do have some discrimination in this country. And found that Alabama had to redistrict and they had two black districts. The same thing had happened in Florida. The same thing happened in Mississippi. And the same thing happened in North Carolina. South Carolina is still fighting theirs. And Louisiana had an order, which it has chosen to ignore or redistrict in a way that supposedly is in compliance without being in compliance. The Fifth Circuit, which used to be part of the 11th Circuit, or the 11th used to be part of the 5th, has basically said they have an opportunity to adopt a new plan, which is appropriate since redistricting is a quintessential obligation of a state after a census. That sentence was written by Judge Leslie Southwick, who is a George Bush appointee to that court. Louisiana has effectively frozen the case against them for the last 2 years, considering similar redistricting dispute in Alabama. The 5-4 decision, obviously, in the Alabama case made it readily apparent that they had to do something. They have done nothing. And so the Federal Appeals Court has set a very short deadline, making sure that whatever redistricting plan is adopted is either by them or by the Louisiana legislature will be used for the election in 2024. That's why Alabama has been stalling. That's why South Carolina is stalling, because they understand that the majority in the House of Representatives is at stake. We're talking about anywhere from 10 to 16 either reinstated or new black districts in these states that will swing the majority back to the Democrats almost automatically. And so as a result of which, it's not that they wouldn't get the majority anyway with this House of Representatives and the new servant to Donald Trump, Mr. Johnson, who went down there and kissed the ring last week, you know, who believes that, you know, we're supposed to be a theocracy, but we talked about him last week, Laird. 2 weeks ago, I think we talked about it. So the Louisiana district, so that's one story that we have to pay attention to over the next 3 or 4 months now. We're going to have to pay attention to what happens in North and South Carolina, what happens in Alabama, what happens in Florida, what happens in Mississippi, what happens in Louisiana. And I understand there's a case pending right now in Texas, okay, to reinstate black districts. And get back onto the idea that democracy requires it under the Voting Rights Act. We have a majority that's going to enforce this stuff. However, it should be noted that our favorite Supreme Court Justice, Justice Thomas, has created another mess that the Eighth Circuit has picked up out of his dissent in the Alabama case. Why can't I read Allen versus Milligan? I was right, Allen versus Milligan. And let's talk about that a little bit. Have you seen this, Brendan?
No, first I heard about it was this morning when you told me about it.
Yeah, the Eighth Circuit, in a 2-1 decision, two Trump appointees have decided, despite, and what they said was that what was raised in the dissent in Allen versus Milligan by Justice Thomas was that the Voting Rights Act, Section 2, which is the section that's being applied, was only enforceable through actions by the Department of Justice, and that individuals did not have the right, or organizations did not have the right, to use Section 2. Now, he makes that argument, and the Eighth Circuit picks it up and adopts it. But in a dissenting opinion, it should be noted that Trump appointees David Strauss and a Bush appointee by the name of Raymond Grunder wrote in the majority what I just told you. In a very brief dissent, Chief Judge Levinsky Smith, who is a black judge, the only black judge on the Eighth Circuit, made it very clear that, yes, the Supreme Court has never directly addressed the existence of the private right of action under Section 2. However, it has repeatedly considered such cases that private rights of action exist under other sections of the Voting Rights Act, and concluded in other VRA cases that a private right of action exists. So they have impliedly said that actions under the Voting Rights Act are not just for the Department of Justice, by saying nothing, by allowing it to happen and considering those cases. They have ratified that right. So this is a new attack. This case will go to the Supreme Court, and obviously they're going to have to take cert on this, and we're going to end up with the same 5-4 majority. Mm-hmm. Unless somebody from the minority decides to change and become part of the 6-3, which is pretty much the way things are going these days with the Supreme Court. So I wanted to raise that. Both the Louisiana case and the new Eighth Circuit case, I think it's out of Colorado, but I'm not real sure. We'll see where this goes, but it's going to be interesting because it is, in my opinion, really going to decide exactly who wins the House. Mm-hmm. This is the only thing that can save the House for Republicans, even though I think they'll lose the House anyway. They're going to lose a seat tomorrow when they vote George Santos out. They lost a special election last week, so their majority is down 2 votes. They're down to 3. And none of them, especially Johnson, are not Nancy Pelosi. And they cannot do anything with a 3-person majority. They just won't accomplish anything. So, I mean, Nancy did. She had a 3-vote majority, and she passed all kinds of good stuff.
Right.
And she held them together and kept them unified. And Jeffries has done the same. So we'll see what happens, but that's kind of a deciding factor.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get on to one more thing. We talked about this, and you can comment on this. The Supreme Court has handed the governor of the state of Florida, Ronald DeSanctimonious, I love using that name even though he got it from the other guy, a huge defeat. They have refused to review an 11th Circuit opinion that says the anti-drag queen or anti-drag show law down, and said, no, it's unenforceable. And the Supreme Court refused to take the appeal. Of course, Ashley Moody, being the hugely bright woman running the Attorney General's office following the one that was before her, what's her name, Pam Bondi, can't seem to get anything into the Supreme Court. And when she does, she loses. Here we go. She lost again. So we just wanted to mention that. It seems to be happening all over the place. Even to the good people of Tennessee now have to allow drag shows. So be that as it may. Well, why?
No, I did not.
Yeah. Well, oh boy, that's not a girl.
Yeah.
Don't you make a comment on drag shows?
No, I just. Okay. Oh yeah, I mean, if Tennessee has to have drag shows, I mean, This is the stuff that Republicans are worried about, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There are all kinds of issues that we could be addressing. But, you know, you look at what Republicans are worried about. They're worried about drag shows. They're worried about transgender persons using public restrooms. When's the last time any person in one of these states, you know, walked into a bathroom and suffered some kind of crisis, right, because a transgender person was in the stall next door? Obviously, it boggles the mind that anybody would care about any of this. But I guess we shouldn't lose sight of the reason they're doing it. You know, on a serious note, I mean, pretty much every time we get on here, we have to talk about this. The effort to find the enemy within, right, the other, they got to target somebody to get people all worked up, right? And so, yeah, it's drag queens and it's transgender persons. And as the lower courts have said, I mean, this stuff is so unconstitutional.
Yeah.
You know, we do have a First Amendment, you know.
Well, I think, you know, I don't know if you knew anybody that ever did the practice of the ADA that had these companies with a guy who would go around the country finding ADA issues.
Yeah.
And then file a lawsuit so the lawyers could make hundreds of thousands of dollars making people put ramps in and things like that, okay?
Right.
And I think that's kind of what we're going to find out with this bathroom gender thing, is that there's going to be, for example, women who are going to be hired to go into a bathroom, to stand outside a bathroom waiting for someone who is transgender to go into the bathroom and follow them in there, okay? And scream. Okay, and scream.
Yeah, right.
Okay, if they have been damaged, and file a lawsuit because they don't have they don't. That's why what they have in most places they're building now are gender-free bathrooms where you know you just lock the door behind you and you do your business and get out, and it's not now women get more upset than the men do. Because women hate the fact that men don't put the toilet seat up or put the toilet seat back down again, you know, that kind of thing. All right.
Right.
But I could see that happening. And as a matter of fact, I got to say this: I was in the Baltimore airport this past weekend, coming home from Syracuse, where the sun never shines, and I went into the bathroom, and I'm looking for what men usually use. You know, the urinal, and there's no urinals in this bathroom. It's the men's room. It's got a sign outside that says men. It's a former women's room, okay, with rows and rows of stalls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Okay. And all the men are walking around. It was crazy. Okay? They don't know what kind of bathroom they're in. And I happened to be there 5 days before when they were changing the signs. I realize this is the ladies' room that they made into a men's room. It was hysterical. These guys are—they're going back and forth between the, you know, here's the rows of the sinks to wash your hands, and there's the row of on one side there's a row of stalls. So they walk back to the other side, and there's a row of stalls. Okay, they're all looking around.
Right.
It was hysterical. It really was.
Yeah.
I'm glad you reminded me of that. It just made my whole day. Okay.
I got a question. How do you know if someone's transgender? How can you tell?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know.
Well, that's a pet. Well, I'm going to say this.
Jeff, whatever you're going to say, Jeff, I'm not sure. Oh, God.
I mean, maybe she goes and looks in the stall and goes peekaboo. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a question I always had. You know, how are you going to police this, right? I don't know.
Well, that's
somebody asked Ron DeSantis how. Yeah.
I got some other thoughts, but I'm going to stop with that one. Okay. I don't know. maybe they're going to have to make. Maybe they're going to have to expand Terry versus Ohio. I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Wow. All right. Let's talk about something that's not funny. Donald Trump. Okay. I stopped laughing. Okay. Okay. This is just not funny. Okay. Anymore. So we can talk about that for a while. We got a bunch of stuff. I think I told you. Did you find the article about the last ruling from Chunkin, Brendan?
Which one? No.
One about the subpoena from. Okay. Yeah. All right. There was a subpoena issued that was objected to by Jack Smith regarding the defense trying to get materials from the January 6th committee that had been turned over to the White House in the executive branch. They wanted all that material. They claimed that there were interviews with people who were employed by the White House as basically full-time employees who work administration after administration, like the butlers, like the housekeepers, like the cooks. There's some administrative staff that are professionals that are not political appointees. And there were other things they wanted. They wanted video depots and all kinds of stuff that they said that the executive branch has control of. And so Jack Smith said, that's all speculative. It's a fishing expedition. It's meant to, we need months and months and months to go through this material, so you're going to have to continue the case. And Chunkin basically wrote an opinion saying, yes, this is a fishing expedition. Most of what you're talking about that you want has already been turned over to you by the prosecution, by the Department of Justice. But you think there's more simply because you want to believe there's more. So as a result of which, if you can be specific as to exactly what you want, what witness you're looking for, what material exactly from that witness you're looking for specifically, I will consider trying to get it for you. But you're on a fishing expedition. You're trying to stall this trial, and this isn't going to happen. And reiterates, the jury selection starts on March 14th, I think it is. So she's going to trial in March, and there's nothing they're going to be able to do to stop it. It's interesting that she's just not – she's doing what Aileen Cannon should have done, and she'd be mm-hmm. done with her case by now. Her case would be over. But instead, she's, you know, like I said last time, has become the defense attorney for in robes for Donald Trump. But I think that's mm-hmm. interesting that Chunkin is doing these things, that she's just not giving in. She would rather convict him, sentence him, put him in without a supersedious bond because he has other charges pending in other jurisdictions and he's a flight risk, and put him in jail. And if she gets reversed, okay, she gets reversed. I really think that's her thought process. So what do you think about that one, Brendan?
Yeah. There's no question it's all a delayed game. I mean, that's the whole shooting match for Donald Trump right now is get elected president before he gets convicted anywhere. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see if he succeeds. He'll need the help of appellate courts to do it because, as you say, this district judge is not playing the game. So, I don't know. I saw Morning Joe making a good point this morning that it's probably not time to panic about opinion polls when all of the actual voting that's going on is trending heavily in favor of Democrats.
Right.
But I continue to be troubled that at this point, any poll that showed Biden ahead of Trump would be the outlier.
Interesting. Yeah. Biden's not. There are polls out there that have both of them within the margin of error.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So that leaves the undecideds making the decision, and the undecideds tend to be independents, and independents are going to go very heavily for Donald Trump for Joe Biden. They're not going to go for Trump on a lot of ground. I just don't see look, inflation's down, gas is down, food's coming down, housing's coming down. And people are spending money like crazy. If things are so bad, why they're actually spending and saving. If things are so bad, how are you able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that you can't buy a car for no interest. You're never going to be able to do that again. That's how we got into this fix in the first place. But other than that, the economy is rip-roaring hot. The only problem we have, we don't have enough people to work. But we don't want any immigrants. So we got to get rid of child labor laws and put our 10-year-olds to work. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's not rational. Totally irrational.
It's not rational, and I don't think I think they'll be far more rational next year than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly believe that. Donald has decided that threatening a judge and a clerk is okay.
Oh yeah, sure.
After he clearly lost, even though there isn't an opinion yet, in the New York Court of Appeals on the gag order from the New York trial, the fraud trial, his lawyers wrote a letter that said that his First Amendment right to criticize and call out the perception of bias by the judge and the clerk without retribution is essential to maintaining public confidence in the trial. Public confidence in the trial and the justice system depends upon his criticism. Kind of a little narcissistic, don't you think?
Yeah.
At base, the disturbing behavior engaged in by anonymous third-party actors towards the judge and principal law clerk publicly presiding over an extremely polarizing and high-profile trial merits appropriate security measures. In other words, the people that are doing it for Donald, based upon the things that he's saying, they should be protected from. However, it does not justify the wholesale abrogation of Trump's First Amendment rights in a proceeding of immense stakes to him, which has been compromised by the introduction of partisan bias on the bench. I mean, that's chutzpah.
Yeah.
And again, for those of you who do not understand what chutzpah is, it's Yiddish for unmitigated gall.
Yeah.
That nature of a man who kills his mother and father and stands in front of a judge having been charged with murder and pleads for mercy on the basis that he is an orphan.
Right.
Okay? And that comes directly from the American Yiddish Dictionary. There is such a thing, by the way. Okay. There is such a thing. Mm-hmm. It was quoted in a case, is it the Riveron case? I forgot who the plaintiff was. or the who the appellant was. But it was written by Jim Jorgensen, probably the most Nordic-looking man you've ever seen in your life. This guy was perfect, okay, for a movie about Vikings. And he was a former police officer, but he was a Jewish wannabe. So he learned Yiddish from certain people while he was a police officer, and then he became a judge. And he actually used the word chutzpah in an opinion. and then he put a footnote in defining it.
Okay.
It was great. Okay. It was really great. I'll get you a copy of that one. You'll really enjoy them. Iqbal versus Riveron. Iqbal, because I represented Iqbal. Not in that case, in the criminal case. So, be that as it may. Let's see. It was very, by the way, mentioning that, it was very common in the, apparent that during the oral argument last week on the gag order in the New York Court of Appeals that they were having none of it. There was going to be a gag order. It just, the Trump attorney pressed on hypothetical threats against Pence and other witnesses, which clearly were threats. Don't testify. Don't cooperate.
Yeah, right.
Okay, in all caps with an exclamation point. From Donald Trump. Okay, don't cooperate. I'm issuing an order. Okay?
Right.
Okay. Okay. And the key here is that the Court of Appeals is saying, well, if we let him say whatever he wants and you somehow get your hands on the names of the jurors, are you going to go out there and threaten them too?
Right.
Just by mentioning their names and have people look them up and find them. So, what's funny is that both courts that are handling these gag orders are looking. Chutkin's looking at what's happening in New York, and New York's looking what's happening to Chutkin.
Yeah.
And the threats that come out.
Right.
Okay. So, what can I tell you? Let's see. Let's talk about Israel.
Yeah.
We've avoided it now for 40 minutes. So I'm going to let you start this one out.
Well, I'll start by wishing Israel had followed your advice to begin with. I don't know if you remember back when this whole thing started. Before they went into Gaza, you were saying, don't do it. Just shut it off. And Netanyahu did it anyway. So now we are where we are. So go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, my attitude was, and this is a very harsh attitude, and I very rarely agree with General Spider Marx, who's on CNN now, who basically said, you're never going to get them all back. Militarily, it's a very bad decision to get into this, to these pauses. It's going to get dragged out. You're losing momentum. You have Hamas on the ropes. They probably lost 90% of their fighters, either by death or, not defection, but, from running away.
Desertion. Yeah,
deserting. You've used up at least 90% of the rockets that you have. You can't get any more into Gaza because you're completely walled off. You can't get them in by sea because the U.S. Navy's out there, so you're not going to get them in by sea. You have the Israeli Navy out there. You can't get them in across the Lebanese border because Israel's up there. So how are you going to get them into the country? And so as a result of which, The harsh part about this is that many of them, if not all of them, except for the people that have been let go now because they're being used for as currency, that they were all going to die anyway. And you're never going to get your soldiers back. You're never going to get men. Women who have been raped and abused for weeks are never going to get out of there because they'll come back and tell those stories. And when you hold on to a 10-month-old child who is probably in the arms of some Palestinian family who is never going to give that child up ever, even if they could find that Palestinian family, and you have two or three other organizations who have taken some of the hostages, you're never going to get them back. And if you're there to destroy Hamas, then destroy Hamas. That's what Spider Mark says, and I'm starting to believe that. I'm starting to believe that you go in there, you can't bomb them out, you can't do that anymore because the international cry is just too much. So you're going to have to fight it out on the ground. But you know where those tunnels are. You know where these people came from. No, you didn't see them with drones. You saw them from satellites, ours and yours. You know where they are. I don't want to hear you don't know. You do know. And you'll just have to send in a bunch of special forces in one big, huge day of battle. Send in as many special forces or units as you possibly can. Go into those tunnels and just start blowing them up and killing everybody inside. You want to kill them? That's how you kill them. And I know that I'm a liberal kind of guy, and I should be sitting here saying, peace, 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 peace. Well, in this particular instance, no. Because the other side doesn't want peace. World War II is not World War II. World War II is the resumption of World War I. And every time you let Hamas survive, you think you've got peace, but all you've got is a ceasefire. So go in and get them. And I know it sounds terrible, but if the hostages die, they are, in military terms, collateral damage. I still don't believe that there's that many Palestinians that have died. I think you see a body bag come out and get taken away. It goes to the back door and it comes out again. Have children died? Yes. They carry them in their arms and they walk in and then they carry them out and they walk in again with the same kid, but it counts for another kid. I'm not buying the numbers that Hamas is putting out there under any circumstances. So if this is the way they play the game, and you're going to get blamed anyway, you might as well get your money's worth. That's my attitude. I don't know what you think, but that's the way I think.
Yeah. Talk about an intractable situation. It's just, you know, I don't know how it's going to end. But, you know, again, I think Americans ought to think, you know, when something like this is going on, who do you want in the White House? You know, I mean, what would Donald Trump be doing?
There you go. There you go. Go ahead. Go. Just keep going.
Mm-hmm. That's,
just keep going.
Yeah. I don't know. That's, I don't know what the only thing you can say about Joe Biden is he's old, right? And, but he sure seems to know what he's doing.
Do you remember the days when we thought old people were wise?
Yeah, how about that?
So they had picked up wisdom. We don't. There's no value for wisdom anymore. But keep going. I'm sorry. I had to add that one in.
No, no, that's exactly right. And I don't know how you deal with that. I think it probably is time for Biden to really start owning it and joking about it. Because it's on people's minds, as we know. See, he doesn't paint his face orange and he doesn't turn his hair yellow. So, you know, he actually looks older than Donald Trump, right? And he's got, so it's the optics thing. So he's got the Democrats have got to find a way to deal with that issue. But no, I mean, once again, we see on the world stage, having a statesman and somebody who learns and somebody who cares, makes a big difference. And, you know, I don't know what all Donald keeps saying is that if he had been president, Russia wouldn't have invaded Ukraine and Hamas wouldn't have attacked Israel. And then, you know, we never learn how. How exactly, Donald, were you going to wait? But he might right that Russia wouldn't have invaded Ukraine because he would have handed it over. Right?
There wouldn't have been an invasion. They would have just taken it over and gotten rid of Zelensky, who Donald didn't like anyway.
Right.
That's all.
Mm-hmm.
We would have helped them commit a coup. That's all.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been a war. I agree. But they would have taken over Ukraine.
Yeah, exactly.
Here, Vladimir, here's a present from me. Be nice to me. Can I build my tower now?
Yeah, right.
Will anybody rid me of this troublesome priest? He raises his hand and I will.
Yeah.
I just think that you know, I know that what I said is harsh, and I know a lot of people are going to sit there and say, how can you say things like that? Okay, and I tell you how I can say it, because I know history. And it is unbelievably hypocritical of the United States and the Allies in World War II in Europe to bitch and moan and complain about civilian casualties. I will point to just one night, about a month and a half before the war was over. The war was essentially over. And we sent over 1,000 bombers with fire bombs to burn the city of Dresden to the ground and kill as many people as died in Hiroshima. And we don't talk about that. A firestorm that sucked up so much oxygen that people who weren't burnt to death died of suffocation. But we don't talk about that. We don't talk about the rubble and the deaths in Berlin or Munich or the other cities of Germany. We don't talk about that. We don't talk about what we did with two bombs in Japan and killed over 125,000 people in 2 days. We don't talk about that. But we talk about, it's terrible, these unimaginable numbers of deaths in Gaza. Why do we do that? I don't understand. Because we don't know history. We just refuse to accept history. And we refuse to accept that the enemy that we have doesn't care about human life. They don't care. And I mean, even to themselves, they think, they're almost saying, please shoot me because I will go to paradise and I'll have 40 virgins. Got to be running short of virgins by now. We don't think about these things. Could you imagine what this country would be saying if we lost the same proportionate number of people in 9/11? We didn't lose 3,000, we lost 40,000 people. Can you imagine what the people in this country would have been like? As angry as they were over 3,000, can you imagine if it had been 40, a proportionate number to the number of people that were lost on October 7th? I can't imagine it. The failure to drop atomic bombs, there would be people in the streets literally demonstrating against the decision not to drop atomic bombs or nuclear bombs. We don't use atomics, nuclear bombs. I don't know where we get off telling Israel. And Biden is doing this. He's trying to calm them down. He don't operate out of anger like we did in 9/11. I got it. But he has said, if they stop giving you hostages, go do your thing. Just be a little bit more precise. Drop bombs, but don't drop, you know, unguided bombs. Drop, you know, basically guided bombs that are precision and dropping them in certain places. Don't just destroy buildings. Okay. But he's letting them go. And I just don't see any reason to wait any longer because I don't think we're going to get very many more because the demands are only going to get worse. They're only going to get worse. To get the men back, we have to give them their top generals or organizers and get them out of Israeli prisons. And to get the soldiers back, Israel has to abandon Gaza. Just leave. And that's not going to happen either. Finish the job. Of course, I don't want to use those words because that's what Biden says he wants to do. I need another term so I can finish the job. So, come on, Brendan, you haven't said four sentences.
Is that right? Well, I'm listening, you know.
Well, yeah, but everybody else is too.
Let's see. What else we got? What else we had
on
the list?
The Fannie Willis thing.
Oh yeah. Okay. So so in Georgia, Republicans created this commission to discipline prosecutors who don't go along with the Republican playbook. And the commission, apparently the commissioners on the commission are of the opinion that they can't do anything unless the Georgia courts, and in particular the Georgia Supreme Court, adopts the rules that allow the commission to operate. Yesterday, the Georgia Supreme Court issued an opinion refusing to approve the rules under which the commission is supposed to operate, expressing quote-unquote grave doubts about whether the judicial branch in Georgia could supervise prosecutors who are not in the judicial branch. Prosecutors, in case people don't know, don't work for courts. Prosecutors work in the executive branch of either the federal or state government. And prosecutors make decisions. They have discretion on who to prosecute and when, what to charge. They have the authority to enter into plea bargains, which do have to be approved by courts, but it's the prosecutors who make the deals. And the Georgia Supreme Court is saying, look, you know, we can't supervise the decision-making of prosecutors. Now, Republicans in Georgia are not going to be happy about that because it means that the commission is blocked right now. And what Republicans in Georgia, of course, want. I mean, it's just amazing what a banana republic move this is. Right. They don't like that the voters in Fulton County made Fannie Willis their district attorney. And they don't like that she is enforcing the law against Donald Trump and his ilk. And they want her disciplined or removed. Again, it's banana republic time, right? This is how you do it. So if the law is not in your favor, you just remove the people who are enforcing it. But the Georgia Supreme Court is not playing along. So we'll see what happens there. But for the time being, Fannie Willis is free to continue doing what she's doing. It's amazing that anybody could argue at this point that what she's doing is corrupt or that she doesn't have the evidence when she's flipping people left and right who are pleading guilty in exchange for cooperation. So she's apparently got the goods. Otherwise, you wouldn't have people pleading guilty like this. But that's what's going on in Georgia. I just saw that last night and this morning.
You know, what's striking is a Republican legislature is deciding that the people of Fulton County elected a black prosecutor. What's the percentage of blacks that live in Fulton County? You know, like what, 60-70%?
Mm-hmm.
Was that ever going to be a surprise? And what's surprising is there had never been a black prosecutor before. No, there was a black. No, black prosecutor was up in DeKalb County. They had a black prosecutor up there. Still do. Different one. But it simply amazes me that the idea of democracy is totally lost.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no discrimination in the South anymore.
Yeah, right.
If you don't believe me, ask the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court.
Right, right.
I mean, I find this so hard to believe. I mean, it's outrageous that there's discrimination in the South.
Right.
I'm appalled. I'm amazed. You know, seriously, I using the levers of a democracy that you have bastardized to serve your purpose to deny others the same rights that you exercise in a democracy.
Right.
Okay, so what can I tell you?
Yeah, that's
I got no explanation for it other than white privilege, but we won't talk about
that. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Well, you know,
the bane of our existence.
You know, you wonder why I'm not saying much this morning. What's because, you know, you actually reached the point where you say, "What else is there left to say?" I don't even know what to say anymore. I don't know. Right?
But, oh.
Well. I'm in disbelief. I turn on the TV. Right? I watch the news, and I say, "This has got to be a joke. This can't be happening."
But it is.
So you turn off the news,
it is.
Right?
I just think it's great that at least there are some people who are calling out the Republican Party for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They're fascist. And the Speaker of the House is a theocracy fascist.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he is. Okay? And Donald Trump is nothing more than imitating Adolf Hitler. He is Adolf Hitler reincarnated. And he believes that if he goes to jail, he will get out very quickly and then run for president again and win, even though he'll be 84 years old. But wait a minute. What? Biden's too old now?
Mm-hmm.
Wait for it. I am in perfect health.
Mm-hmm.
I am 6'2" and I weigh 215 pounds.
Right. Yeah. 6'3", don't call him short.
Okay, no, that's with the lips on. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, 6'2", 215. Okay, wait a minute. That's what he said he was, 6'2", 215. Okay, that's it, but only if you cut my legs off.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you leave my legs on, I might be a little bit heavier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I got to wait for him to lose, 12 pounds of ugly fat? In one stroke. Chop your head off. Okay. I'm not saying somebody should do it. I'm just saying if you really want to lose 12 pounds ugly fat, I got a simple way for you to do it. And you don't have to take Ozempic or Wycova, okay? You can do it all by yourself. You don't even have to keep giving yourself needle shots.
Well, thank God it's 11 o'clock.
Okay. No, Jeff Swartz Unleashed.
Right.
It's unfortunate it's not going to be the end. There'll be next week, too.
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, no, some good stuff might actually happen. It is Christmas time.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. I mean, you never know.
Yeah.
You never, I mean, you know, Santa's, you know, making his list and checking it twice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I know
so
somebody who's getting
a
big old lump of coal for that.
Well, that's okay because I celebrate Hanukkah, so I can use,
the
coal to keep the fire burning for the
light
of Hanukkah.
Right, okay. Right. A little chilly down here in Florida this morning, by the way. That's
Was it
in the 50s out there?
Yeah, well, it was in the 30s when I was in Syracuse.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cold. Very cold.
Yeah.
And cloudy.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, you know, the people who live in Syracuse come out, the sun comes out, and they come out and start screaming like something bad has happened. What is that thing up in the sky? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's 5 days of clouds. Oh, my God. I had my lights on during the day. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Okay.
Oh, God. Okay.
Boy, I felt like Charlie Brown. You know, the ones where he has the cloud over his head and it's raining on him?
Yeah.
I felt like the whole time I was in Syracuse.
Oh, God.
Okay, we got like real work to do. I have to be out of campus at noon, so I got to get out of here.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Ezzy.
Thank you for the invite.
Thank you
really
both.
Appreciate it.
What a pleasure.
Okay.
All right.
We'll see you next week.
See you next
Feel
week.
Better.
Absolutely. I look forward to it always.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. There we have it, folks. None other than the inimitable Brendan Beery, Jeffrey Swartz, both of WNU Cooley Law School and the Tampa Bay area are there at the Cooley Law School campus there. So always a pleasure, to say the least. Well, let's go on and find out what else is happening on the world stage. Evidently, the Israel-Hamas war. Qatar says that more hostages are going to be released. Doha says that 10 hostages held in Gaza will be released today and 10 the day after, following the extension of the truce between Israel and Hamas. So the International Red Cross said it facilitated the release of 11 hostages held in Gaza by militant Islamist group Hamas. The Israeli Prison Service confirmed the release of 33 Palestinian prisoners. A mediator, Qatar, and the United States said late on Monday that a truce between Israel and Hamas had been extended by 2 days, with Doha seeking further extension. Well, the U.S. and Israeli intelligence chiefs in Qatar are going to discuss truce, so say reports. The U.S. and Israeli intelligence chiefs are in the Qatari capital to discuss a deal between Israel and Hamas to extend the temporary ceasefire, the Agence France Presse and Reuters news agency reported. Well, the CIA director, William J. Burns, and Mossad chief, David Barnea, were set to meet with Qatari and Egyptian mediators, according to sources that were quoted by the news agency. Quote, the director of the CIA and the director of the Israeli National Intelligence Agency, Mossad, are in Doha to meet with the Qatari prime minister to build on the progress of the extended humanitarian pause agreement and to initiate further discussions about the next phase of a potential deal, an unnamed source advised Agence France-Presse. Well, the meeting was, quote, to build on the progress of the extended humanitarian pause agreement and to initiate further discussions about the next phase of a potential deal, sources advised Reuters. According to the Washington Post, the United States wants Israel and Hamas to secure a longer multi-day deal for a pause in fighting and to consider the release of men and military personnel as part of the hostage deal. Burns would also reportedly push for the immediate release of American hostages held by Hamas. Then we hear from Germany. Scholz is hailing the initial hostage release and demands the immediate release of others. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said all hostages held by Hamas, quote, must now be released immediately, unquote. Speaking in Germany's lower house of parliament, the Bundestag, he committed his government to that goal. Scholz said he was relieved that some hostages had been freed, quote, through tireless diplomacy, unquote. Well, the fact that several Germans are among those released is another reason to rejoice, he said. On Friday, 69 hostages have been released, including 10 German dual nationals. Scholz added that the German government will continue to contribute with all its force, end quote, to securing the release of the remaining hostages. Well, only from 4 hours ago, Qatar is working to extend the Israeli-Hamas truce even further. Qatari mediators were focused on further extending a temporary ceasefire between Hamas and Israel in Gaza beyond Wednesday, said Majid al-Ansari, a spokesman for Qatar's foreign ministry. Quote, our main focus right now is, and our hope, is to reach a sustainable truce that would lead to further negotiations and eventually an end to this situation of violence and to the war, he said in a press conference in Doha. Qatar on Monday announced a 48-hour extension of an initial four-day truce, opening the way for further releases of hostages held by the Palestinian militant Islamist group Hamas, in exchange for the release of some Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. Al-Ansari said the 10 hostages held in Gaza will be released on Tuesday and another 10 on Wednesday. He was unable to say how many hostages in total were still held by Hamas. The Agence France news agency quoted a, quote, source close to Hamas, end quote, as saying that 10 hostages would be freed from Gaza today, as well as 30 Palestinians who who had been detained by Israel. Well, the United States is asking Israel to avoid civilian displacements in Gaza South. The United States has told Israel to avoid significant civilian displacement in any ground offensive in southern Gaza, senior White House officials said, according to the Associated Press and Reuters news agencies. Israel was planning military operations in southern Gaza after its truce with Hamas expired and had asked residents of some neighborhoods to evacuate their homes. Quote, you cannot have the sort of scale of displacement that took place in the north replicated in the south. It will be beyond disruptive. It will be beyond the capacity of any humanitarian support network, end quote. One U.S. official was quoted as saying by Reuters, quote, it can't happen, end quote. The official said an offensive in the south needs to be deconflicted, quote, unquote, from power, water, humanitarian sites, and hospitals. Well, it turns out a French warship in Egypt could treat Gaza wounded this week. French Defense Minister Sébastien Lecornu announced that the warship Dismoud is docked in Egypt and could begin treating wounded Gazan children before the end of the week. Quote, we have this ship, which has been transformed into a hospital and which arrived yesterday. It has 40 beds, Lecornu said in remarks to Europe One Radio. The Dismoud has been adapted to facilitate a military civilian medical team, including 22 civilian doctors, 16 of whom are surgeons and 6 of which are pediatricians. The ship, moored at the port of El Arish, is the first Western military vessel to dock in Egypt since the conflict ensued with a surprise attack on Israel by Islamist Hamas, a terrorist, on October 7th. Located about 31 miles west of Gaza, El Arish serves as a hub for international aid to the Palestinian enclave. The Western powers are ramping up efforts to facilitate humanitarian aid toward torn Gaza. Egypt has requested specialized French medical equipment and financial assistance to help integrate wounded and sick Gazan children into their healthcare system. Defense Minister Lecornu said that French military officials are coordinating approval to operate with Egyptian and Israeli officials. Italy has also dispatched a medical ship to the region as Western powers seek to counter impressions that they are not doing enough to help Gazan civilians trapped in a brutal conflict. Well, the question is, well, how the war affects West Bank farmers. Olive branches have long been regarded as a symbol of peace, but now they are a source of conflict in, quote, the occupied West Bank, end quote, as Palestinian olive farmers accuse Israeli settlers of blocking access to their olive groves or even damaging the tree. Well, Israel has approves a list of Palestinian prisoners for release. The Office of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that it had approved a list of Palestinian prisoners to be released should Israeli hostages also be freed. Quote, the government has approved the inclusion of 50 female prisoners in the list of prisoners eligible to be released in the event that the release of additional Israeli hostages is carried out, end quote, Netanyahu's office said in a post on social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter. Under the terms of the initial agreement, 50 Israeli hostages taken by the militant Islamist Hamas group would be released in return for 150 Palestinian prisoners. Mediator Qatar on Monday announced that the temporary pause in fighting in Gaza had been extended by 2 days, although there has been no official confirmation from Israel. Israel has said the truce could be extended by an extra day for every additional 10 hostages freed, but has vowed to quickly resume its offensive once it ends. Well, about 14 hours ago, Blinken is going to visit Israel and the West Bank this week. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken will be visiting Israel and the West Bank again this week as the U.S. hopes to find ways of extending the truce in Gaza. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said that Blinken will engage leaders to address the urgent humanitarian situation in Gaza, end quote. The visit will be Blinken's third trip to the region since Israel declared war on Hamas following the militant Islamist group's target large-scale terror attack on Israel on October 7th. Blinken is expected to travel to Israel and the West Bank after attending NATO ministerial meetings in Brussels and North Macedonia. Well, about 14 hours ago, we hear that life after the terror attacks in Israel are taking place. The terrorist attacks by militant Islamist group Hamas transformed life in Israel overnight. How are people coping? Amid war between Israel and Hamas and escalating tensions across the Middle East, we meet people whose everyday lives are now marked by fear, suffering. So the European Union chief welcomes a truce extension. The European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has welcomed an agreement to extend the temporary truce between Israel and the Hamas militant Islamist group. Quote, I once again call on the Hamas terrorists to release all hostages taken during their horrific attack on October 7th, end quote, von der Leyen had said on Tuesday. This is what she said in full. She says, in the past 4 days, it has been heartwarming to see the first Israeli hostages freed, von der Leyen said, along with hostages of other nationalities. I also welcome the substantial increase in the delivery of humanitarian aid to the Palestinian civilians in Gaza, made possible by this pause in the hostilities, she further said. The European Union chief said that 20 flights had brought in 900 tons of aid to Gaza via Egypt and said another 4 flights are planned for this week. Well, a physician has advised Deutsche Welle that some of the released hostages are in a critical condition. Deutsche Welle spoke to Professor Hagai Levine, a physician and epidemiologist who is heading the medical team of the Hostages Family Forum in Israel. The professor admits the last few days with the release of some of the hostages held by the militant Islamist group Hamas have been a mix of hope and despair, quote unquote. While quoting further, while some hostages are released, end quote, Levine said, my heart and soul is not only with them, but also with the others that are still in Gaza, more than 150 hostages, and that some of them need urgent medical care, and the Red Cross is still not allowed to enter there. So I have mixed feelings and strong feelings, he said. Of those released, that what struck the professor most was, quote, the resilience and solidarity, end quote, among them in the face of such adversity. Levine shared a story of how one hostage, quote, requested that instead of being released, end quote, she asked another woman to be released first because she was, quote, in worse condition, end quote. Levine called for, quote, patience, end quote, as the hostages eased their way back to full health. 15 hours ago, a Red Cross bus arrived in the West Bank. A Red Cross bus carrying 33 freed Palestinian prisoners arrived in the West Bank town of Ramallah early on Tuesday. It was the fourth such release since a temporary truce between Israel and the militant Islamist Hamas group. The Associated Press reported that the bus was met with loud cheers as it made its way through the streets. Since Friday, 50 Israeli hostages and 150 Palestinian prisoners have been released. A four-day pause in fighting, which facilitated the exchange of hostages taken during the October 7th terror attack by Hamas for Palestinian prisoners, was due to run out on Monday night. However, mediator Qatar announced it would be extended for another 2 days. The Israel Prison Service has confirmed the release of 33 Palestinian prisoners. This is about 15 hours ago. Israeli prison authorities said early on Tuesday that 33 Palestinian prisoners had been released in line with a temporary truce in Gaza. According to the prison authority, the inmates included women and teenagers. And this brings the number of freed Palestinian prisoners to 150. The militant Islamist group Hamas, listed as a terrorist organization by Germany, the U.S., Israel, and others, handed over 11 hostages to the International Red Cross on Monday in return for the prisoners. Only a few minutes ago, we've learned, and this was updated about half an hour ago, the Israel-Hamas war, Qatar says more hostages are going to be released. Doha, the capital of Qatar, says that 10 hostages held in Gaza will be released on Tuesday and 10 the day after, following the extension of the truce between Israel and Hamas. The International Red Cross said it facilitated the release of 11 hostages held in Gaza by militant Islamist group Hamas. The Israeli prison service confirmed the release of 33 Palestinian prisoners. Mediator Qatar and the United States said late Monday in a truce between Israel and Hamas had been extended by 2 days, with Doha seeking further extension. The U.S. Israeli intelligence chiefs in Qatar are going to discuss truce, Sosa reports. The U.S. and Israeli intelligence chiefs are in the Qatari capital of Doha to discuss a deal between Israel and Hamas to extend the temporary ceasefire, the agent France Press and Reuters news agencies reported. CIA Director William J. Burns and Mossad Chief David Balmea are set to meet with Qatari and Egyptian mediators, according to sources that were quoted by the news agency. The director of the CIA and the director of the Israeli National Intelligence Agency, Mossad, are in Doha to meet with the Qatari prime minister to build on the progress of the extended humanitarian pause agreement and to initiate further discussions about the next phase of potential deal, an unnamed source advised Agence France-Presse. The meeting was, quote, to build on the progress of the extended humanitarian pause agreement and to initiate further discussions about the next phase of a potential deal, the source advised Reuters. According to the Washington Post, the U.S. wants Israel and Hamas to secure a longer multi-day deal for a pause in fighting and to consider the release of men and military personnel as part of the hostage deal. Burns also would also reportedly push for the immediate release of American hostages held by Hamas. Okay, bear with me a moment here as we move on further to some other issues. Bear with me a moment. disease evidently could be a bigger killer in Gaza than bombardments. The World Health Organization is warning more people could die from disease than from bombings in Gaza if the health system is not repaired, the World Health Organization, WHO, said on Tuesday, warning of a surge in infectious diseases. Some 200 humanitarian aid trucks have entered northern Gaza since the Hamas-Israel truce deal was reached last week. The Palestinian Red Crescent said earlier today, and following an extension of the deal, Hamas is set to free more hostages later today in exchange for the release of Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails. And so that's the latest information we have. Bear with me a moment. One second. All right, bear with me a moment here as I try to catch up. Just see if I can get this done. Okay, let's see if we can get this. Well, evidently the Indian workers are trapped in the collapsed tunnel have been rescued after 17 days. Bear with me a moment here. India flew in a new kit as they raced to free the 41 trapped workers entered its third week. So India's military brought in specialized equipment on Sunday as efforts to free the 41 trapped workers entered the third week. Digging continued ongoing in three directions after repeated setbacks to the operation, but they have succeeded. So the Indian Air Force had responded with alacrity as they flew in their third load to a rescue operation since the partial collapse of the under-construction Silk Yaro road tunnel on November 12th in the Himalayan state of Uttarakhand. So officials said they called for the superheated plasma cutter to be brought into the remote mountain location after engineers driving a metal pipe horizontally through 187 feet of rock and concrete ran into metal girders and construction of vehicles buried in the earth. While the giant earth-boring machine snapped just 27 feet from breaking through. So, but eventually they got to the point where they were able to get all the Indian workers trapped in the tunnel for so many, over 2 weeks' time. And they emerged from the trapped tunnel. And the workers were seen alive for the first time Tuesday, today, peering into the lens of an endoscopic camera sent by rescuers down a thin pipe through which air, food, water, and electricity were being delivered. So efforts have been painfully slow, complicated by falling debris and repeated breakdowns of drilling machines. Hopes that the team is on the verge of a breakthrough did come about, and they are now free. So it's really a blessing, to be honest with you. Such unbelievable tragedy. It is just absolutely amazing. Interestingly enough, something new has happened. Qatar is trying to broker a deal with Ukraine and Russia to turn more Ukrainian children who were taken during the war back to their families, the Qatari Prime Minister Al-Thani said, quote, we are hoping also for another group to come back to their families before the holidays, hopefully. So it's great to see Qatar stepping up as a mediator, working towards bringing joy to Ukrainian families before the holidays. Truly a commendable effort. Admirable efforts by Qatar to try to reunite as many families as possible before the holidays, as they succeeded in brokering similar deals in the Middle East. I'm sure they will do so once again within the Ukraine-Russian war. Qatar's holiday mission, bringing smiles to Ukrainian families, a deal in progress to reunite more children. Now that's the spirit, the true spirit of the season. And one person said, never thought that Qatar is this generous and caring for other nations. But the bottom line is they are. And they prove it, which is absolutely astounding for a lot of people who just didn't know anything about Qatar. So, let me just see what else is going on. All right, I think we've covered some news from here. I want to move on to some other places. Bear with me a moment here. Let me just check if I have this all in place. Unfortunately, there are more issues around the world. Dozens have been killed in an attack by armed groups in Burkina Faso, United Nations spokesperson had said. At least 40 civilians were killed in an attack on Sunday in Djibo in northern Burkina Faso, the United Nations Human Rights Office said today. Unbelievable. I know, is that all people know how to do, to fight and kill? Is that really what it boiled down to? I don't know how we avoid this. It's evidently becoming frightening wherever you look. Here's something that's interesting. The Paris mayor is quitting X, formerly known as Twitter, calling the social media platform a vast global sewer. Well, Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo said on Monday she was quitting Elon Musk's social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter, which she described as a, quote, global sewer, end quote, and a tool to disrupt democracy. Wow. Talk about, you know, a perspective. Unbelievable. And we've got other issues. It seems that more than a dozen military officers were arrested in Sierra Leone over a failed coup, quote unquote. The attacks on Sunday on Sierra Leone's main military barracks and prisons were a failed coup attempt, have resulted in the arrest of 13 military officers, the government spokesman said today. Unbelievable. Wherever you look, it is absolutely frightening. It's happening around the world. Also, a Niger junta is revoking a law curbing migrant smuggling from Africa to Europe. Niger's junta has signed a decree revoking a 2015 law that was enacted to curb the smuggling of migrants traveling from African countries through a key migration route in Niger en route to Europe, according to government circular issued on Monday. Amazing how all this continues and continues and continues. This is fascinating because I think most people are unaware of it. Bear with me a moment here. Historians are debunking claims that Coco Chanel served in the French Resistance. it seems that a new document surfaced in September indicating that Gabrielle, better known as Coco Chanel, may have played a double role during World War II, serving not only as an informant for the Nazis, but also as a member of the French resistance. But a historian who has analyzed the new evidence says he has, quote, serious doubts, end quote, about her alleged membership in La Résistance, suggesting the French fashion icon may have used the documents to restore her reputation after the war. Well, the previously unseen documents were revealed to the public in mid-September at the opening of a London exhibition, tracing the life and legacy of the French couturier. Alongside more than 50 of Chanel's iconic huge suits and a whole room dedicated to Chanel No. 5 perfume, a part of the Gabrielle Chanel Fashion Manifesto retrospective also dealt with the designer's wartime past. Chanel's links to the Nazis have long been established by declassified documents. She spent the war living at the Ritz after falling in love with German intelligence officer Baron Hans Gunther von Dinklage. In July of 1941, at the height of World War II, the Nazis registered her as a, quote, trusted source, end quote, and gave her the code name Westminster, quote, end quote, due to her close connections with the British government and especially Winston Churchill. In 1943, Chanel was, among other things, tasked with a secret mission of trying to persuade Churchill to negotiate with the Germans. But the exhibition included two new documents claiming she was also part of the French resistance. The first is a certificate allegedly showing her membership in the resistance between January 1 of 1943 in April 17 of 1944, in which Chanel is described as, quote, an occasional agent. The other shows her affiliation with the RIC, R-I-C, Underground Resistance Network, and lists her code name as Coco. Well, quote, we have verification from the French government, including a document from 1957, which confirms her active participation in the resistance. Exhibit curator Auriol Coulon told The Guardian at that time. Gabrielle Chanel, Fashion Manifesto, opened at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London on September 16. It was not stated how the curators had found the documents. The new findings intrigued French historian Guillaume Pollack, a specialist on the French resistance, who last year published a book on the history and inner workings of the movement's networks. Quote, it really surprised me, and I thought to myself, Chanel in the resistance, end quote? How in the world could I have missed something as big as that? Then he went on to spend 2 weeks chasing down the documents. He finally found them in the French military archives in the eastern Paris suburbs of Vincennes. Quote, when I opened up the file, something struck me right away. It was basically empty. Aside from two official documents, there was nothing there. I've rarely come across such a dry file, end quote, he said. Under normal circumstances, Pollack explained, such files are filled to the brim with information explaining the exact role and actions of the resistance member in question and are backed up with several third-party testimonies. Pollack explained that the reason for this is that these files were compiled by the French government after the end of World War II and conform to special legislation that stipulates how and under what circumstances a person can be officially recognized as a one-time member of the French resistance. Quote, if one thing is clear, it is that in order to be called a résistant, a member of the resistance, you need to have been as such and recognized by others as such. Quote, in this case, there is none of that. Not a single trace, he said, noting that a bare-bones certificate with Chanel's name does not offer convincing proof. An important year for Chanel. The second document citing Chanel's role in the Eric network also puzzled Pollock. Quote, it seemed really strange to me, end quote, he said. Eric was a French resistance network that, for the most part, operated in the Balkans. Pollock said that even though its leader, René Simonin, was repatriated to Paris in 1943, and the network continued to work from the French capital for another year, there was no mention of Chanel in any other documentation related to the network apart from the affiliation certificate found in the military archives and presented at the exhibition. On top of that, the network name Eric, quote-unquote, was written over a part of the document that had clearly been whited out. Well, Pollock said he also questioned the date that Chanel's membership certificate was issued, which was 1957. Chanel was 74 years old at the time, and Pollock said that was unusually late compared to other resistance members. It was also, quote, the year Chanel was honored with the Oscar of Fashion, end quote, he said, referring to the prestigious Neiman Marcus Fashion Award created in 1938. At the time, it was one of the only international fashion designer awards in existence. But then there's no reason to keep it secret. Pollock said that if Chanel really was a member of the French Resistance, she would have had no reason to keep it secret, and it would likely have been known before now. Considering the context surrounding Coco Chanel, who has long been known as a collaborator, it just doesn't make sense, end quote. She may have had documents produced to rehabilitate her tarnished reputation in certain circles after the war, Pollock suggested. Quote, in the 1950s, several different resistance veteran organizations emerged. It would have prompted a lot of questions from former resistance fighters. Quote, if Chanel had claimed to have been part of the movement, Pollock said, noting she would most likely have had to justify her role by providing details on what she did, where, when, and with whom. Pollock said he has, quote, doubts, huge doubts, about this documentation, end quote, that had been newly been discovered, quote, the certificate proves nothing, end quote. there would be a moment to try to get this for you. Well, the Paris Ritz is back, where Chanel slept with a spy and Hemingway, quote, beat the Nazis, end quote. Coco Chanel lived there. Princess Diana spent her last days there, and Ernest Hemingway led its liberation from the Nazis. We're talking about the Ritz Hotel in Paris, which reopened its doors on Monday after a four-year closure, boasts a history as rich as its clientele. This was back in the year 2000, 2 years of renovations, originally estimated to cost about $150 million, the Ritz finally reopened its doors, giving the rich and famous the chance to return to one of their favorite haunts. The renovations carried out at the behest of Egyptian owner Mohammed Al-Fayed are meant to bring the hotel back up to the high standards of luxury and innovation for which it became famous. But while the makeover includes installing the latest technology in the guest rooms and a movable glass canopy over its restaurant, it could be argued that it is the history of the hotel, sometimes romantic, sometimes scandalous, but always guilty, that gives its real luster. Proust's last words, quote, in the building there is something in the walls there was something. When people came inside, they talked in a whisper, like in a church, said Claude Rouleau, who worked at the Ritz for 14 years and has written two books on its history. Opened in 1898 by Swiss hotelier César Ritz, it wasn't long before the luxury hotel in the Place Vendôme could list some of the biggest celebrities of the day among its clientele. One of them was Marcel Proust, who liked the hotel so much, he came there for dinner practically every day, says Rouleau, who wrote one of the most famous works, called In Search of the Lost Time, A la Recherche du Temps Perdu, there in 1909. All of the characters in the books were based on real-life clientele at the hotel, said Rouleau. Proust was a frequent visitor right up until his death in 1922, and the story goes that while on his deathbed with pneumonia, he sent his chauffeur, Odillon, to fetch him a bottle of beer from the Ritz, apparently nothing else would do. Quote, thank you, my dear Odillon, for getting me, end quote, were rumored to be the writer's final words. While most writers these days will probably find the hotel's prices a little bit too steep, it could be argued that the Ritz has, in days gone by, played a small but significant role in the 20th century literature. F. Scott Fitzgerald was a regular, especially at the bar, and the hotel features in his novel Tender is the Night, quote unquote. Hotel Noah Coward was also a frequent guest, and his play Semi-Monde, a tale of the extravagant lifestyle but ultimate monotony of the Paris elite, was set at the Ritz. Hemingway liberates the Ritz, celebrates with champagne. But it was Fitzgerald's friend and drinking buddy, Ernest Hemingway, who was perhaps the hotel's most committed literary devotee. Not only did he drink enough at the hotel's bar that it is now named after him, he also once proclaimed that, quote, when in Paris, the only reason not to stay at the Ritz is if you can't afford it, end quote. There is one particular story about Hemingway that is now the stuff of legend, that at the end of World War II, he more or less single-handedly liberated, end quote, the hotel from the Nazis. There are several different versions of the story, but the basic version goes like this. Hemingway, having returned to France as a war correspondent embedded with the American D-Day invasion troops, found himself back in Paris. Though the liberation of the city by Allied forces was imminent, Hemingway decided that he couldn't wait any longer to pay a visit to his favorite haunts, so he rounded up a few French resistance fighters, commandeered a jeep, and set off to take it back from the Nazis himself. But when he got there, the doorman informed him that the Germans had already left. Quote, the doorman told him he couldn't take his gun inside, so he left it by the door, went in, and ordered champagne, said Rouleau. Wartime at the Ritz was one of the darker chapters in the hotel's history. When they arrived in Paris, the Germans used the hotel as a swanky headquarters for high-ranking officers, Hermann Göring among them. The Nazis took over half the hotel, allowing the other half to remain open to guests. And then there's Coco Chanel and her Nazi love affair. Among those guests were famed French fashion designer Coco Chanel, who made the hotel her home for some 35 years. Although Chanel's link to the Ritz is celebrated, the room where she stayed is now called the Coco Chanel Suite. Her time there is marked by allegations of collaboration with the enemy. It was while she was staying at the Ritz during the war years that she had a romantic liaison with Baron Hans Günther von Dinklage, a German officer and Abwehr spy. recently declassified documents suggest she was providing information to the Nazis, though Roulette doubts how active her role really was. I don't think she ever collaborated directly. I think she was just in love with a German officer, and he exploited her, she says. In fact, there has been no shortage of love affairs between the palatial doors of the Ritz and probably many more that will forever remain unknown. It was at the Ritz that the photographer Robert Capa met and fell in love with Ingrid Bergman. While Sophia Loren once said, quote, "The Ritz is the most romantic hotel in the world because a woman really feels a man loves her if he takes her there," end quote. At times, those romances have been tinged with tragedy. It was at the Ritz that Princess Diana and her boyfriend Dodi Fayed, Mohammed Al-Fayed's son, spent their last evening before they were killed in a car crash in a Paris tunnel. Well, there's modern age as well. With the doors of the storied hotel now once again open, it will no doubt be the scene of plenty of new tales of the escapades of the rich and famous. But with the modernization of the hotel, is there a risk that some of its heritage and history could be lost? Not according to Roulette, who says that the tradition will always trump change in the Ritz's palatial rooms, bars, and corridors. He recalls the time he tried to introduce the idea of a dedicated guest relations manager at the hotel when he first started there in the 1980s, something it had never had. It was very hard to introduce the idea among the staff. I got a lot of resistance from them. Fed up, I went to see. He was a long, thin man who looked like a priest. He offered me a seat, told me to calm down, looked at me for a while, and then said, "You will never change the Ritz to fit your ideas. The Ritz will change you to fit its needs." And so it goes. So it goes. Unbelievable. What a history. What a legacy. I myself have been in Paris, but I was not aware of the Ritz at that time. I was totally unaware of it. So I don't know if I'm in any physical condition to ever travel by plane again, but you never know. So we'll see. And if that's the case, I have relatives who live in Paris. They're my cousins. My aunts and uncles have long died, many years ago. But my cousins still are there. It would be nice if I had the opportunity in life to see them once again. We'll see. It's a dream, that's for sure. So we'll see where all that goes. Let's check some other things that you may find of interest. Bear with me a moment here. One second. Well, in Sierra Leone, 13 soldiers have died after clashes. It seems that armed attacks in the country's capital allowed nearly 2,000 inmates to escape from prison. Authorities say most of the leaders of the attacks have been arrested and an investigation is underway. A stay-at-home order has been partially relaxed, but remains in place from dusk till dawn. So 2 decades of the Sierra Leone War, and young people say corruption and poverty and unemployment hinder progress. And it seems that the Wagner Group is likely to continue in Africa despite Evgeny Prigozhin's death. And so what is it hope to gain? I don't know. That's going to be really, really fascinating. Let's see what else is happening. It seems that the Tanzanian leader, John Magufuli, was criticized for cracking down on opponents, but he was also a popular leader for many Tanzanians. Ethiopia's Tigray region held elections on Wednesday, defying the federal government's decision to postpone all elections, but it didn't matter, defied the government's ruling, the federal government's ruling. Bear with me a moment here. Okay, I want you to check this out. Vincent Chow, Taiwan's first delegate at the Munich Security Conference since 2015, spoke with Deutsche Welle about more support for his country. He said that, quote, actions speak louder than words, end quote. So Vincent Chow is the first Taiwanese representative to be invited to the Munich Security Conference since 2015. Called for more support for Taiwan, saying, quote, actions speak louder than words, end quote. He also argued that, quote, it is the right time for the international community to show China that China really can't afford to engage in a sort of military adventurism. And well said and well expressed. So we'll have to see where all that goes. Okay. I think we're good on there. I wanted to check something else out there with me a moment. See if there is any further news. No, I think we're good. So that's the end of our second hour, and we've got less than 90 seconds left. So I want to thank you all for being with us. Thank you very, very much, and all the best. Tomorrow is Wednesday. Hope to speak to you then, and take care, and be well. I'm losing my mind, I guess, because of the stress of the closure of the show. So we'll advise you tomorrow, or rather today on the website of who our guest will be tomorrow. So take care and be well. Thanks for being with us. All the best. Goodbye.